Hello and welcome to the Misfire Podcast. My name is Jeremy and I am joined with Blake Noble for today's special year-end podcast. Blake has been on along for the ride for a good chunk of the year, and unfortunately our friend Andrew is unavailable for today, but we will get him in next time. So, without further ado, how about we start off with a round table? Everybody say hello to Blake.
Hello.
Now, Blake, you got yourself a bit of a Christmas present this year.
Yeah, I got coal. A big old piece of coal.
Of course, Blake is referring to his gorgeous Dodge Dart. And I'm sure there'll be pictures included once this is posted. Got any driving impressions for us?
Of the Dart, yeah. Well, I like it. Perhaps not a really razor edge compact car, but I'm fairly pleased with its driving dynamics. It's for what you get, it's excellent. I prefer it to the Chevrolet Cruze, prefer it to, you know, Toyota Corolla, whatever. So there's no real complaints. There's not really any major complaints I have about it, which is really odd too. I should probably mention this. The Dart I have has the 2.4 Tiger Shark, which is the same engine that was in the Chrysler 200
I reviewed. Which you've had a couple complaints about.
Yeah, I did not care for the Tiger Shark in the 200, but it's I'm actually not dissatisfied with it with the in the Dart. I think it's actually it's not fast, but it never feels slow. It's interesting, and the thing of it is too, I mean, the weight difference is supposedly not that great between the 200 and the Dart. I think it's like a marginal weight difference between the two cars of like a couple hundred pounds.
Now, so, sorry to interject. Now, are you talking about engine responsiveness, like acceleration, anything like that?
Well, yeah, it's acceleration, responsiveness, everything. Well, another thing is, too, another factor here is that, you know, my car is a six-speed manual, and the 200 that I drove was the nine-speed automatic, which, I don't know, I think I'm starting to form a pretty, not a positive opinion of that automatic transmission, so.
The 200 you drove was the starting tier, right?
It was the well, it was the limited. The base model, the base model 200 is the LX.
Okay.
And then, of course, you move it to the limited, then you move it to the C and the S. Or the S and then the C.
I mean, it could very well, I mean, they tune these transmissions for different types of customers, so I would imagine that the 200 was probably fuel economy first and foremost.
I don't know.
You don't think
it's,
so?
I don't know.
Well then, we're certainly looking forward to a much more thorough, in-depth review down the line. Be sure to take it through some twisties and let us know how it goes.
Yep.
Do you have any New Year's car resolutions?
Not to buy anymore.
Not to buy anymore, right.
No.
For anyone who doesn't know, Blake has come from a Hummer H3, so this is a long journey for Mr. Noble. He's owned more cars than he has Twitter followers.
Yeah, that's sad.
Please, well, I don't know what's sadder, the car ownership or the Twitter follower situation. Of course, here you are. You're telling me that you're now looking at Isuzus of all things. Like, yeah, you should probably stick to that new car, that New Year's resolution of yours.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Isuzu thing is just kind of a S&G sort of deal. Yeah, no.
I see. So, what makes this version of the Misfire a little bit different is we're going to be recapping a number of the stories of 2014. It's been a fairly interesting year for the automotive industry. Now, Andrew, of course, isn't here. I know that he would probably bring up the lack of, or the FCA's obliteration of the Pentastar logo, but he's not here, so we won't have to hear his complaints. I think it was on Cheers and Gears, I saw one person suggest that FCA and VW should merge.
No, oh no.
I could swear that was on there, and of course I have no idea what this person's business prowess or background is, but that just strikes me as like being the worst idea you could ever have.
You know, actually I think it wasn't, not like a reader or a commenter on Cheers and Gears who said, I think it actually came from someone at Autoblog or something like that made that suggestion. Yeah.
It must have been something like they just wanted to make an editorial that would make everyone mad, but that's what Jalopnik is for. We've each picked about top five stories, you know, over the past 2014. Blake, how about you, maybe, if you want, go down your list or address them point by point. What are your top 2014 stories?
My top 2014 stories would be, to start off with, would be GM's total recall of pretty much every car it ever built. Then, of course, moving on from there, you've got fuel prices. That's another big one because we have seen record gasoline prices the last couple of years, and now they're actually doing something that, honestly, I didn't think would happen. They're actually, you know, they're dropping. And then you've got, FCA spinning off Ferrari. That was unexpected. They spun them off into their own business unit, and they're selling a stake in it. And then you got Johan de Nissen, who has recently left Infiniti for Cadillac. That was big too. And also, they're moving the brand to a new headquarters in Manhattan. And then you've got Tesla's battery factory, the long rumored battery factory that's that legislation's been trying to win favor with Tesla for. That finally has come to life, and it will be built, I believe, in Arizona.
Here's another New Year's resolution for me in terms of the car industry. I'm going to have to learn how to pronounce Johan de Nissen's name. Is it Nissen or de Nissen?
De Nissen, I don't know. Yeah. I just know Johan is that's how you say his first name. But yeah. De Nissen, I can't. It's one of those names that no matter what you do, you're going to be saying it wrong.
And our resolution is to figure out his name so we don't sound like total utter tools. Well, of course, you're talking about the GM's recall. I was reading an article. This was the CNN Money one that you sent me earlier.
Right.
And I was thinking, so it's been about 4 years since Toyota's recall, right?
It was 2009 or 10?
Yeah, I think that's when it was. 2010, I believe.
Yeah.
Is it me? Or... I don't know what it is, but when I read the CNN Money, it almost seemed forgiving in a way. It's the weirdest thing. It's just like when Toyota's recall happened, everybody was all over it. Everybody. You had guys like trying to replicate Priuses accelerating unintended. It seems like I'm not sort of seeing the same thing.
Well, I mean, as far as, Mary Barra was brought before Congress. She was absolutely grilled in a certainly in a similar manner to Akio Toyota, I believe is the CEO of Toyota, who was brought before Congress at the time too. I think he's still at the helm right now. So they kind of were treated similarly. Their treatment in Congress was remarkably similar.
Yeah, congressionally, yes, but it seems like in the media. I don't know if it's just, I just feel like it's a little bit different.
I wonder if it has, if there's a sort of, been there, done that, got the t-shirt mentality kind of permeating GM's circumstances. Because, you did have Toyota circumstances that ran, 4 years prior. So now you've got, the GM thing going on, and everybody, maybe it was just me. But I kind of picked up on this attitude of, okay, we've kind of seen this, major automaker, going through a major recall. Are they covering stuff up? What's going on? So I kind of got that vibe. Kind of picked up on that vibe a little bit. Now, as far as outlets trying to replicate, faulty ignition switches, I do remember there was this meme going on of people trying to knee their ignition, ignition keys to try to see if they can shut their car off that way. I did kind of see people kind of doing that. It wasn't through Dateline or anything. I think Dateline tried to replicate Toyota's accelerator pedal.
If I recall correctly, too, that was discredited.
Yeah, it was. I believe I know that they outright falsified they're like kind of like replicating like something they did back during like Audi's
right
unattended accelerated. They kind of falsified that. I can't remember exactly the specifics of it, but I do know that was going on. Let's see. And oh yeah, that also brought up an interesting. There was also kind of an interesting editorial brought up. I can't remember where I read it though. But ignition keys. That actually could be an obsolete thing, a thing of the past. The standard, you know, cut metal ignition mm-hmm. key could be long gone because of this.
Well, it makes sense with so many of these keyless systems in place now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, even like, for example, my Dodge Dart has a key, but it's a, you know, an RFID key. Okay. So it's just, you know, you stick it in the dash and you turn it like an old school ignition, but there's a chip in it.
I see.
Even if you do have a key that you actually stick in the dash and turn, I mean, there's no actual cut key you're actually sticking in there anymore.
Mm-hmm. And oil, well, as I noted in a prior podcast, already sales of SUVs and trucks are starting to rise again.
It's interesting you bring that up because actually in researching this, you know, the links for this podcast, I did come across, I should have probably thrown it in there in hindsight, but I did come across one outlet that said to the contrary, you know, lower gas prices are not like causing this big spike in SUV sales.
Okay.
I can't remember like the specifics of why they were arguing for that, but I thought it was interesting because that is, you know, pretty much the consensus on that.
It's sort of a multifaceted thing. I mean, people are looking at these gas prices and it's an incentive to mm-hmm. pick something bigger, but there's other things too. If I recall correctly, I think, I don't know so much up here in Canada, but I do remember reading some fairly positive articles about Americans' credit situations.
Mm-hmm.
And that has a lot to do with it too. If you're feeling, you know, pretty good about your credit, you might be more willing to take on a Ford Explorer over a Chevrolet Cruze. So mm-hmm. It is definitely a multifaceted thing, but I do know this is all anecdotal. But a couple people that I did speak with are looking at vehicles with larger engines because of gas prices. North Americans, it seems like we just never learn, but I digress.
We have the memory of a goldfish. But I will say this, though. I mean, as far as, you know, gas prices right now, I mean, it actually was a deciding factor in me actually getting rid of my SUV.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that because, you know, I don't know what the mentality is that leads people to believe that, you know, lower gas prices are here to stay, but they are most certainly not. Will they go back up to $4 a gallon? I don't know. It's kind of hard to say, but I don't think this new era of like $1.99 gasoline, I don't see it staying around, you know, in the long term.
There's sort of a 3-year period that some people are talking about.
And you know something else that may actually play a role in this, I just now kind of thought of this, gas prices this low may actually be the 2016 American presidential election because you do have Republicans pushing for the Keystone XL pipeline. And if that goes through, if they actually go through with that and they actually build that, that would also play a role as to, you know, gas prices staying low or going back up.
Not necessarily. Most of that oil is destined for refineries in Texas for export.
Mm-hmm. For export, that's interesting.
Yes.
Because everything I've heard said it was for not just export, but it was for consumption in America as well. Right.
Up here in Canada, for example, a lot of people are fairly bullish on the Keystone Pipeline, but it would actually benefit Canada's economy, or at least, you know, our companies, far more than it would benefit America. At the end of the day, a lot of that oil will be sent, you know, potentially overseas. So I think that one pipeline, there's so many pipelines on North American soil anyways, I don't really foresee another one really making that huge of an impact. I think it's more of I don't want to say smoke and mirrors kind of thing, but effectively the oil markets are so complicated that I don't think one pipeline is going to make a difference. And the other thing too is that even if they approve it, if you look at oil sands production up here in Canada, it's expensive,
mm-hmm.
very expensive to extract that oil. And we're already starting to see a number of companies. There was one I was reading in the news just earlier today that they specialize in the creation of camps and also, like, you know, living quarters for people who are on oil sands or those kinds of production facilities. remote, mm-hmm. etc. And they're already, I believe, cutting some staff. They're already making some big changes.
Mm.
So what happens is that you're going to actually find, at least, you know, it's getting to the point where producing that oil, at least up our way in Alberta, is going to become less cost effective.
Mm.
Even if Keystone's built, I'm not sure it's going to have that much of an impact, if any.
Mm. Interesting.
But it is definitely a, you know, just like I said before, you know, definitely a lot of various reasons going there. So we will see. I mean, at the end of the day, fuel, you know, all these vehicles have become so much more fuel efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention more enticing.
Yeah.
I know one of the top five stories I was going to put in, but I eventually didn't, was, you know, the Fiesta ST.
Hmm.
Definitely testament to the fact of how far we've really come with small cars, to the point that even with low gas prices, they're satisfactory purchases.
Mm-hmm.
We've come a long way from the Chevrolet Aveo.
We've come a long way from the Chevrolet Cavalier.
I would actually say the Cavalier was a better vehicle than the Chevrolet Aveo.
Yeah.
It's really funny. I used to see a lot of those, at least up here.
The Aveo or the Cavalier?
I'm sorry, the Aveo up my way in Vancouver. They sort of just ballooned, and now I barely see them.
Well, you guys were double-dipped in the Aveo, though. You had not only the Aveo, but you had the G3 Wave by Pontiac,
yes,
didn't you?
Yes, yeah. The Wave.
Mmm. Mmm. Fine automobile right there.
Yeah, and of course, we also had the Pontiac G5, which was called the Pursuit for 1 year as well.
Yep.
Before the names got unified. All right, how about we talk about Johann Denisian, especially Cadillac moving its operations to, you know, New York. Why is that significant to you?
Well, I mean, it's significant in the automotive industry because Cadillac, for the longest time, they were part of GM. And now, I guess that's kind of the underlying thing. Now, you know, GM is, well, what at its root is this. Cadillac right now, they are building some excellent cars. ATS is universally praised. CTS is universally praised. People are going gaga over the new CTS-V.
Mm-hmm.
So Cadillac is making some very excellent cars. Maybe not the ELR so much, but for the most part, you know, 90% of everything they've done has been excellent. But yet it hasn't translated to increased sales. They're not dominating, you know, the luxury car market, you know, like they had hoped. Mm-hmm. They're not, you know, stealing away thousands and thousands of BMW and Mercedes owners. So, you know, when they kind of realize that, hey, we're building this great product, but nobody's buying, I believe what GM did was they hired away Johann D. whatever to lead Cadillac.
Mm-hmm.
And one of his first moves was to take the brand out of Detroit and then move it to Manhattan. And this is something he's actually done with a lot of the brands that he's actually been at in the past. He did it with, he moved Audi headquarters from, I think it was from, is it Stuttgart to Ingolstadt?
Ingolstadt, yeah.
Yeah, yep. And then he moved Infiniti headquarters from wherever they were, I guess maybe a filing cabinet in Tokyo to, you know, Hong Kong. So it's something that Johann has done at a lot of the brands that he has worked for.
Mm-hmm.
And the thinking is that, you know, moving it away from its, you know, corporate parent kind of allows a little more autonomy, kind of allows the brand to actually kind of, you know,
breathe
work a little more breathe a little bit and work a little closer with its buyers to kind of fine tune what they're selling. And I mean, I can't argue with the fact that it has paid off. It maybe didn't happen overnight, but it has paid off for Audi. It remains to be seen if they'll do the same for Infiniti and Cadillac, for that matter. But another thing is, too, is that, you know, there was also this big stink, too, because this is kind of why it was kind of unfounded. But when they moved Cadillac's HQ away from Detroit to New York, there's like this big stink, like, oh, you know, here comes another blow to Detroit. They're losing these jobs again. It's like 50 people had to move.
Mm-hmm.
Cadillac's R&D is still GM R&D. It's still going to be based in Michigan. And so on and on down the line.
They need Matthew McConaughey.
They actually, you know what? Say what you will. I mean, I can make fun of those commercials all day long.
They're getting attention.
Yeah, they got attention. They, I mean, you know, Saturday Night Live's parodies.
Yeah.
They've actually, you would think that would drive that ad campaign into the ground, but it's done nothing but give it more exposure. There's actually a there's actually a new ad out with McConaughey for Lincoln right now as a result of that.
I'm even seeing, I don't know if you're familiar with The Verge. It's a tech news site. They compete against Gizmodo, you know, the Gawker Media. The Verge is, I forget the parent at the moment. Yeah, they've actually done a couple articles, and now I think they're doing like the top, like Matthew McConaughey thing. So it's penetrated different realms. And especially when you think about it, The Verge is a tech website. Lincoln is not something I would necessarily associate with technology. I mean, if you look in the Navigator, you look at that dash and you're staring right back at the year 2005.
I look at the front of it and I stare into the eyes of an Oldsmobile Cutlass. Anyway.
In any case, it's good. They certainly struck gold there. Whether that translates to sales, I don't know. But the funny thing is, people have been talking about them. So they struck gold there, and maybe that's what Cadillac needs. Whether a jaunt to Manhattan will give that to them, I guess we will wait and see.
Conventional wisdom tells you that if you build a great product, the people will come. Well, in GM's case, it doesn't really always pan out that way. I mean, even before Cadillac, you had stuff like the Pontiac GTO. You had the Pontiac G8. Mm-hmm. And then now it's the Chevrolet SS, and now you've got Cadillac. It's odd. I mean, on one hand, you know, you can chastise GM all day long for building mediocre crap. But on the other hand, when they do build stuff that's not mediocre crap, nobody buys it. It's GM has it's a weird paradox for GM. Mm-hmm. It really is.
Let's go to another domestic automaker, Tesla. You were saying their battery factory is going online. Of course, that's a big story. Want to take that one?
Yeah. Like I was mentioning earlier, that has finally come to pass. Tesla's long-rumored Giga battery factory is, I believe, being built in Arizona? Nevada. I'm sorry. That was a complete flub on my part. It's Nevada. But they are being backed by Panasonic to the tune of around $1 billion. And I mean, it's a big deal. It's going to bring a lot of jobs to Nevada. It's actually going to help Tesla maybe build more cars. It may actually turn Tesla into a supplier.
Well, that's the interesting thing, because remember when they did that patent thing a few months ago, you almost have to wonder that you never know with their hypercharger stations, for example. They're kind of creating a proprietary format of batteries. Maybe down the line, that's their goal, is to effectively become a major supplier to other car companies. Having their brand, of course, but that's also what a lot of electronics manufacturers do. For example, the screen in my MacBook and in your MacBook are likely produced by Samsung or LG.
Right.
Which, of course, have competing products to Apple. So I have a feeling that Elon Musk is taking a similar tack, where he might soon be wanting to supply competing companies. At the end of the day, what that does is leverages the tech, makes it cheaper for everyone, and leads to better product.
Well, and another thing is too, I mean, it's not exactly new for the automotive world. I mean, I know General Motors and Ford, for example, worked on 6-speed automatic transmissions.
That's right,
and Chrysler and BMW used to work on, like, hybrid technology. So that's not exactly that new of an idea, but the approach may be.
I think it's more the approach.
Yeah.
That, you know, normally, again, they've partnered with Panasonic. But they haven't, like, partnered with Toyota, so at least not to my knowledge. That's I'm definitely very interested. I'm really looking forward to the crossover Tesla that should be coming out, I believe it is.
Model X, yes.
Yeah, that is coming out this year, or has it been pushed back?
Last I heard, it had been pushed back,
okay.
But I think it's coming toward the, I may be wrong, but I believe it was toward the end of 2015.
Okay, yeah. I'm pretty stoked for that. FCA spinning off Ferrari. Now, you know me, I don't really pay too much attention to the exotic.
Well, with FCA spinning off Ferrari, the real thing that kind of surprised me anyway, and I think it may be what surprised a lot of readers out there, a lot of enthusiasts, is that, I mean, personally, I'm not a big, I don't wave flags for exotic automakers, but it is surprising because Ferrari, that's a brand that does have a lot of prestige. It's a brand that does have that has a very positive image. FCA, Fiat Chrysler Automobiles, they owned it. That was one of their brands. And now they've spun off to its own company, and they're actually selling off a chunk of it, a 10% chunk of it. So you would think it sort of makes you kind of go, you know, what's the deal? And it's speculated they did this so they could actually raise some extra funds. Mm-hmm. Apparently the fiat side of FCA is still kind of in a bad way. Them actually spinning off Ferrari and then, you know, offering up 10% of it, it's been looked upon as a way for them to kind of, you know, get a little extra cash going.
Well, that's a very smart thing to do. If you think about it, like, people are attracted to the Ferrari images vehicles, you can imagine that some wealthy oil fella from Qatar would be very interested in buying into that. So they're certainly leveraging their image in a very good way.
Well, I mean, like I said, it is kind of unexpected because, I mean, that's like Volkswagen spinning off Bugatti in a way, you know. So, you know, it was just unexpected that they had actually, you know, went ahead and, you know, did that. And then beforehand, there was this big, huge drama going on with Ferrari's former CEO or president. I can't remember his exact name, but he was Sergio Marchionne pretty much just pushed him out of the company. He was Ferrari's former leader. He was making comments like Ferrari is becoming Americanized and all this other stuff. It was, I don't know, the whole like lead up to that was also very odd.
Okay, well, top five on my end. Of course, we've covered oil and recall. Those are sort of the two no-brainers right there. I'm going to go into another kind of exotic car. It's an exotic car for a cut-rate price, and that is Dodge's Hellcat models, the Challenger and Charger Hellcat models. Now, I'm not talking about them for the vehicles themselves being a big deal. I'm bringing them up because they're a big deal in conventional media. I've never seen media coverage on the, like, any RV, you know, maybe the Prius, yes. But the Hellcat, I have seen, for example, there was a magazine article in Maclean's, which is Canada's answer both to Time and Newsweek, those sorts of, and I think it was a two-pager on the Hellcat itself. I'm seeing it in NBC News. I'm seeing it in all kinds of traditional media where usually vehicles like this, you're going to only see them in automotive, like enthusiast publications. And it's really interesting that there's other vehicles coming out. You know, there's the new Tesla Roadster. There's, you know, the Cadillac CTS-V. I mean, that's a really, new CTS-V is really well received, but I'm not really seeing that in, say, you know, ABC News or an Up Our Way CBC News. And yet up here in Canada, I counted about three articles on CTV, that's the Canadian Television Network, on the Hellcat. Again, these are articles written for the regular guy, news consumers. Chrysler struck gold on this.
You know, I think a part of the reason why is because those two cars are so horribly politically incorrect.
Well, that's, you know, exactly what I think it is.
Yeah, we're in an era, well, not at the moment, but we have been in an era of, you know, extremely high gas prices. We've been, you know, the price of a barrel of oil is a major talking point, even now. So here you have Chrysler, a company that, as far as I'm aware, they don't build a single hybrid model. That's pretty politically
unless if you count the Charger, but, which they claim burns, you know, rubber and gas.
Yeah, but you know they do not build a conventional hybrid. Sergio Marchionne.
Well,
hold on.
They did have that Durango with the hybrid, didn't they?
Yeah, but somebody like a Chrysler corporate like farted, and they were like, we built a hybrid? Oh, he farted.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
The reason it was noteworthy is that I just
cut that out, Ned.
I don't think so. what happens is that it's just the amount of media exposure that the car has gotten that is just not that it's overwhelming, but the fact that it's gotten as much attention as it has versus other models. So I think you're definitely right about the whole political incorrectness thing. But it certainly is marketing gold. Like, I mean, even the name Hellcat, I think that's probably it. If you're some journalist who's going through multiple press releases via PR Newswire or whatever, you see like in big letters, Hellcat, you're probably going to click on that. So they definitely hit marketing gold with this thing, and it's reaching a huge audience. So bully for them for being able to, you know, penetrate outside of the automotive enthusiast circle. Even though it isn't for traditional buyers, it's certainly gotten their attention. Next up for me, Apple's CarPlay is starting to make its way into vehicles. Now, I know, of course, that Google's competing software is coming out soon, too. But what we're looking at is perhaps a little more, a new generation, more user-friendly infotainment options. For example, over the past 2014, we've heard a lot of people describing real displeasure with units such as Cadillac's Q system.
My Ford Touch.
Yes. I believe that lawsuit was launched this year. There was a lawsuit launched against Ford again just because it was so horrible. So this is sort of 2013, 2014 have been kind of the year of, like, you know, infotainment systems that have kind of had people tearing their hair out. So Apple's CarPlay and the Google, what's the Google Android Auto is going to, you know, unify those systems with people's phones.
Well, you know, what's interesting too is that I believe Apple CarPlay has already started to roll out.
Yep, that's why I'm talking about, because it has just started to roll out.
Well, you know, what's kind of disappointing for me is that, you know, my Dart has the 8.4-inch Uconnect system. I made it a point to get that. And so far, Chrysler's not really shown much of an interest in actually upgrading Uconnect to where it will actually, which, I mean, to be fair, Uconnect is, it is and was the better infotainment system on
the
market.
Yes, yes.
But they haven't really shown much of an interest in actually adopting Apple CarPlay.
That's the interesting thing is where this is going to go. Ford, for example, with their new system, of course, they're still going it themselves. We'll have to see. I imagine that automakers are going to be adapting fairly quickly, because that just becomes a big selling point. Especially for me, if I was looking at a vehicle, that would definitely be a top thing to look at, because
it's like an aux jack was like 10 years ago.
That's exactly it. Or USB compatibility, like when Bluetooth came out, that was a big deal. I still remember reading, I forget which economy car it was, I shouldn't say economy car, but small car, and it was such a big deal. Maybe it was a Hyundai.
It was a Ford Focus. It was the worst Ford Focus they sold here. That was like its major selling point.
There you go. Yeah. Bluetooth. It was a big deal. So this is probably the new Bluetooth, or like you said, aux jack.
Yeah.
Finally, my third thing, guy. I'm calling 2014 the year of regular car reviews. For anyone who is unfamiliar with regular car reviews, I recommend you seek it out on YouTube, but do make sure that you don't have any loved ones or children in the room when you watch these.
Or anyone with incontinence problems.
Effectively, this is a web series where a fellow by the name Mr. Regular, he insists upon using that name. He doesn't use his own for reasons that, well, he doesn't. He likes the freedom of not having to, you know, people not really knowing who he is. So he can go to a car show or some kind of event and people won't start running up to him. It also adds to a bit of a mystique and allows him the freedom to do his reviews on his terms. The reason I'm saying this is the year, because I was going through a motorcycle thread one or two days ago on Reddit, and I'm not a big fan of Reddit, but I just picked a random thread, and sure enough, somewhere they're talking about Hayabusas, and someone references regular car reviews. I'm going through another thread on another forum, and someone mentions regular car reviews. I believe he's at about 15 million total views. And I think we're looking at about 130-some thousand subscribers, where it's getting to the point of where this has become a car cultural phenomenon, part of the vernacular, if you will. Definitely, going to be interesting in 2015 because Mr. Regular had this interesting dynamic with a lot of his fans where it seems like he's sort of juggling back and forth between trying new things and then pulling back to more, you know, some of the traditional memes or the traditional things that he's done.
Well, I mean, it is interesting. I mean, by all means, Regular Car Review should not be as popular as it has become. You would think it wouldn't be. I mean, I remember the first time I ever watched one of his reviews. It was it the Grand Cherokee or the Avenger that I watched? I think it was the Avenger. And the Avenger is certainly, how do I put this? The Avenger has some pretty interesting moments in it. I'll put it that way. But no, I actually am kind of glad that he's actually kind of had success, because if you notice his channel, I mean, there are exotic cars on it, but he focuses on, you know, humdrum, you know, sedans and hatchbacks.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And the DeLorean.
It's not to mention, too, it has a real honesty about it that you don't find in a lot of reviews nowadays. A lot of car culture reviews, they focus so much on specs. Here, half the time, if he talks about the engine, he kind of, like, glosses over things, or he's like, it was maybe like 130 horsepower-ish, something or other, you know?
You know, it's interesting because, yeah, he doesn't so much review the car as he does the era it came out in, and
yes,
B, the people who drive it.
Well, and that's, I think, why a lot of people are not fans of it. There's a lot of people who, I think, you know, people who sort of, you know, step back and look at what he's doing. He's got this very macro point of view when it comes to the car, and you're very correct. Like the Chrysler New Yorker review, where he talked about how it fit into the Lee Iacocca strategy, was actually very, you know, like, I never thought of it in that way. So it was very interesting. But then I think it gets the grits of a lot of car enthusiasts, because in a way they can't step back, or, you know, he's sort of commenting on their personality. So I can imagine that a lot of people, the Miata review, for example, he's of course parodying a lot of Miata owners, but also in a way I thought it was a bit of a shot toward, you know, over the bows of, say, the likes of Jalopnik or auto enthusiast websites, where if you read any kind of top 10 thing, Miata's always on there. It, you know, they say it's the best. It's number one. Well,
it's always the answer. What do you need? You need something that goes off road? Yeah, buy a Miata. Put some mud. Put some mud.
Like what? You want to go to shopping and go to track day? Yeah, buy a Miata. It's like it's become the default. What's saying fuel economical? Ah, buy a Miata, bro.
Well, yeah, you want to haul home, like, you know, 5 rolls of carpet from Lowe's, and pick up a racing helmet for the autocross on Sunday. Yeah, buy a Miata.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I remember seeing on one forum, like, could you not, where one guy was like trying to encourage someone to just put like bike racks somehow onto a Miata. Like, you know, it's like, yeah, you can go fit. The guy was like, I think I need to, like, you know, get a little wagon, like a Fit or something. And they're trying to say, oh, get a Miata. It's to the point of parody.
Yeah.
Where, like, the Miata's good car, you know? It didn't have any real competition until the Solstice in the Sky kind of came along. And even then, those weren't a threat whatsoever.
They were compromised.
But he certainly did, you know, like, in a way, really parody the fact, you know, some of the over-the-top enthusiasm of the Miata owner. Or the S2000 review, you know, another car where, you know, he said that it's brought to you by couples therapy. You know, a lot of guys who drive an S2000 probably could use some couples therapy, and I think a lot of people get really defensive about that kind of thing. Because in a way, you know, he's really exposing how a lot of people attach their personalities directly onto their vehicles, and vice versa, or even adopt the personality of that vehicle onto their personality.
Interesting.
That is my final top five. So how about, I'll put you on the spot for this one.
Okay.
Worst or dumbest 2014 car related news in your opinion?
Oh, wow. Let me think. I was thinking about this earlier and I had something and it's totally just left my mind. Well, you know, I was I was kind of wanting to go Matthew McConaughey Lincoln on this earlier, but no, it's not. After the conversation we've had and just thinking about it, now that really wouldn't be some of it would be dumb news.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we talked about this in a previous podcast. There was that couple in New Zealand who got trapped in their Mazda 3. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That was a pretty dumb story.
Yeah, they got locked in their own car because, you know, they left the keys on, like, a patio table, and it had a Sentry key, and they believed that without the key on their person, the doors wouldn't unlock or something like that, and they nearly died. They're, like, trapped in their car for, like, what, like, 16, 17,
something,
18 hours?
Something to that extent, yes.
Yeah. So that was, it was sad on one hand, but at the same time, it's just like, you know, what the hell?
What were you thinking?
Yeah. I mean, you may be old, but doesn't wisdom come with age?
It just strikes me as being so weird that they just would not try and open the door.
They did everything. They tried to bust the windshield out. They tried to, like, what? Like, bust the glass out with, like, the tire jack?
I mean, I know they did almost die. I know that it's not, you know, I mean, it's funny, it's also terrible, but it definitely is up there. It definitely is a very dumb story. On a more positive note, or maybe not, 2015 prediction. What's yours?
Let's see. 2015 prediction. I believe, do I want to be bold or do I want to play it safe? I'm going to play it safe. My prediction for 2015 is that we will see a new Nissan Titan at the Detroit Auto Show.
Oh, come on.
Lame. It's lame, I know.
Come on.
Okay,
this is where you get to have fun.
All right. Balls to the wall. Balls to the wall. Let's see. The Corvette will finally go mid-engine. There we go.
Really?
No.
Okay. Well, my big bold prediction is that I don't know who's going to do it, but I believe that a big three automaker is going to buy a motorcycle company. What happens is that, of course, we've seen the Volkswagen XL1, which is powered by a Ducati engine. If I told you maybe 2-3 years ago that VW/Audi would be buying a motorcycle manufacturer, I'd be like, what?
You'd be,
But yeah. Ducati has made some great strides in their engine development, and what we've seen is they've been bought by VW/Audi, and we've got the XL1, which is powered by a Ducati V-twin. It's a 197 horsepower engine, foot-pounds of torque, and it goes from 0 to 60 in 5.7 seconds. So certainly nothing to sniff at. Honda, they do quite a bit of joint, a couple of their engines and their motorcycles are shared. I think they're like half of a fit engine, so there's already collaboration. I have this weird feeling that we're going to see a big three pick up a motorcycle or a power sports manufacturer. That is my prediction. I have a feeling that your Nissan Titan prediction is the one that's actually going to happen. If you predicted that it will be a big seller and everyone will love it, well, that's probably a little bit out there.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that. It'll be just like,
it's going to debut, like, but...
Yeah, it's going to debut, but nobody will buy it.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was a great podcast and a great way to sign off for 2014. So, believe it or not, this is a podcast that wasn't actually a total misfire. Unbelievable. The only knock here, pun intended, is Andrew isn't with us today, but he has just signed on, and apparently he's very mad that he didn't get to join us. All right, well, thank you so much for joining Blake and myself, and we will be seeing you in 2015 with a Misfire podcast. So thank you so much for tuning in.
Thank you all very much.
The Misfire podcast, we will be back in 2015. Hopefully we'll be talking about plenty of cool North American International Auto Show stuff, and we hope you'll join us for then. Take care, have a happy new year, and thank you for listening.